I'm sorry to whoever has the name for the last question, because that is for the book and we have to stop there, I must believe. So, thank you both. Janet, do you have anything to say to this nice man who's come to join us today?
Just delighted that he's Doctor Who. He's a fabulous Doctor Who.
Welcome to Doctor Who On Target. The podcast where we discuss the target range of classic Doctor Who novelisations from the 1970s and 80s. Those long ago days where, if you missed Doctor Who on TV, you missed it forever. Unless, of course, you bought the Target novelisation. So, join us, jump aboard the TARDIS, set the time rotor for late 20th century Earth, and, with a wheezing, groaning sound, we'll discuss Doctor Who on Target. Hello and welcome to Doctor Who on Target. This is Greg in Swansea.
This is David in Chelmsford.
And David, we're looking at, we're not looking at a Target book actually this time. And David came up with the idea, which I think was great, which is to actually do a review of the Christmas special. And do you want to tell us the fab title, David?
Yes, it was called The Return of Dr. Mysterio.
I love that. I think it's, do you it's like good, that title? Yeah.
I think it's an in-joke, actually. I read on the internet, I don't know how true it is, but I think you should always take what you read on the internet with a big pinch of salt at the best of times. Yeah. But Dr. Mysterio is a sort of a Mexican program name for Doctor Who.
Oh, right. I see. What, in but translation?
I truly hope that's true, because... Oh. I really do, because I think that's rather good. Dr. Mysterio.
Yeah.
Mexican version of Doctor Who.
That is great, isn't it? That's great. So I'm going to check that one. So that's probably the translation, is it?
I don't know. I think it might just be something that's gone viral because someone thought it was funny, but I'd like it to be true.
Yeah.
I'd like it very
it's
much.
Great. I like that very much. So, David, did you... when I watch Doctor Who, I think I'm probably more of an obsessive than yourself, I think. I sort of, my house, it sort of goes into lockdown. Where
really?
Yeah, the curtains are closed, the lights are off, nobody's allowed to disturb
me. No one's talked.
Yeah, I know. My wife said, I'll go upstairs and watch something else. that's what she actually. She used to like it when David Tennant was in. She's never been a Doctor Who fan, but she rather liked some of the David Tennant ones. But when Matt Smith came along, she didn't like Matt. Didn't take to him at all.
No, very young.
Yeah, I think that very was the problem young. She had. Was I mean, it's quite interesting because the time when I met. Peter Capaldi, you know, I said to him what my wife said when he was announced in that special programme was, she said, thank goodness, a proper man again, she said, you know, which I think he liked that.
You know, I can understand he might like that. I think the thing, I also liked David Tennant a lot. I thought he was excellent as the Doctor. Matt Smith came along and he played the character... very awkwardly.
Yeah.
That was his unique selling point, is that he did awkwardness.
Yeah.
But now Peter Capaldi's come along and he does awkwardness, but he does it with a degree of gravitas because he's older. And in many ways it's a lot funnier.
Yeah.
When he does that. You know, he's all knowing at one level, but he's a bit of an oaf at other levels as well. And he did it in the Christmas special as well. There are a couple of really good scenes where he lurches between the superhero, the man who controls everything, and a buffoon.
Yeah.
Or the clown. I suppose when we think about Patrick Troughton's Doctor, we often think that he's a super clever clown who fools the enemies through clowning, but he's in fact got a plan. And I think that's Peter Capaldi's performance as well. I very much enjoyed it.
Do you know? Yeah, me too. That's really interesting you said that, David, actually, because we think of, or he's often alluded to Matt Smith as being the sort of Patrick Troughton type doctor, isn't he?
Right.
You know, people are always saying he's very much, because I know that that was his favourite doctor, I believe, isn't it, was Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's interesting for you to say that Peter Capaldi is actually more of a Troughton, because I can see that he really does have
when he does the awkwardness and the clowning. Yeah. But of course, I mean, visually he has got a lot more resonance with the third doctor, and that's absolutely intentional.
Yeah.
From the sort of the wiry grey hair to the clothing, I expect the Pertwee doctor would have worn Chelsea boots, and the Capaldi wears Dr. Martin's boots.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely intended that he has and the air of the third doctor about him. Of course, the third doctor was far more of an establishment figure.
Yes.
He was in league with UNIT, wasn't he? Whereas this doctor, as I remember him, was actually kidnapped by UNIT to become world president.
Yeah, right, he was, isn't he? Yes.
So he's slightly less of an establishment figure, but absolutely such a strong resonance with the third doctor.
Yeah.
I guess the more doctors we get, the more source material there are for the actors to draw on. And so if they watch the show as we've watched the show, they eventually end up with their own performance, which inevitably is a mixture of what's gone before. They can't but help it, because they've absorbed all of the other characteristics.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Greg. Sorry.
No. That's really interesting, actually. I was actually wondering, we've gone straight into talking about Peter Capaldi, and I think that's because it seems to me now, Peter Capaldi is the show, it seems to me now. He's such a strong doctor in it, and I think he's an absolutely fabulous actor. And when he is serious, he is so
he's intense.
He is intense, isn't he? And I love, and as we saw in that episode last year, was it called Death in Hell? No, I can't remember what it's called now, but Hellbent, something like that it was called.
Hellbent was the one where he punched his way through the wall of whatever that solid material was. That was the one he was on his own.
That's the one I was
thinking. Escaping from that perpetual trap.
That's it, yeah. And he carried the whole show effortlessly. We didn't need anybody else. It took me back. Remember when Tom Baker always used to say, I don't want companions, I'm the doctor. Just have it about me, wasn't it? And Peter Capaldi's managed to do that.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, actually. I don't know if you intended this, but I think where new who is concerned, and we've had two producers now, or executive producers, we've had Russell T. Davis and Stephen Moffat, and of course the Russell T. Davis version of the show was very much a family-based thing. It seemed to orientate around family units, and it seemed far more preoccupied with the people around the doctor and not the doctor himself.
Yeah.
But what Stephen Moffat seems to have done is he seems to have made the primary focus absolutely the doctor.
Yeah.
And that's I'm perhaps not exclusively, but it is the doctor's show again, isn't it now? And you need a strong leading man in that. And that's what they've got.
I think so. I agree entirely. And you've just prompted me, actually. We'll talk about that the show being about the Doctor when we perhaps discuss the trailer later. Because
the trailer?
Very
much. Very much nails his colours to the mast in that.
Yes, yeah. That'll be interesting.
That trailer, doesn't he? When he speaks about saving everybody's lives and them not knowing anything more about him, he's sort of like the Lone Ranger.
Yes, yeah. But also, when I picked up.
Being a thoroughly good bloke, but nobody really knows a lot more about him at the end.
Yes, yeah. Which is well, this is what he tried to do in, what was that Matt Smith, there was a season with Matt Smith where he wants to become invisible again. Too many people know him in the universe, isn't it?
He stages his own death, does he?
That's it. Because I think Russell T. Davis had built him up so much, hadn't he? You know, that I think he wanted to sort of get rid of that. Everybody knows who the Doctor is, sort of thing. And it's never been like that, is it?
Everybody knows who James Bond is, but he's still top secret, isn't he?
Exactly.
He walks into any hotel in anywhere in the world. Ah, Mr. Bond.
Yeah.
Everyone just knows him, and yet he's the ultimate secret agent. I think you have to suspend that and understand that the Doctor's made a lot of links with people, especially on Earth, because he's always here.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Seems everywhere, and I suppose I'd call them callbacks, but actually talking about the Christmas episode, again, I'm going to say a couple of things here. Firstly, in our household, we're not reverential about Doctor Who being on the telly.
Right.
So I had to actually watch this back very thoroughly after Christmas Day. It was on, but there was so much chatter through it.
Yeah.
You know, I got the visuals before I actually got the story on this one. The other thing, I knew it was a very strong start to the story, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where he was swinging outside the window because he'd been setting some sort of trap. And I'd call that a callback, and I'm assuming that he's straightening out something he's done in a previous episode. It could well be the Angels in Manhattan. There, I don't know if he's left all sorts of paradoxes there, that this strange contraption on the roof of Grant's apartment block was sorting out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it seemed a very violent trap to be setting, because he ended up sort of suspended by his ankles on the 60th floor of a tower block. Not quite sure who he was hoping to keep off of his antennae.
Yeah.
It did seem extreme, but I suppose it was just the visual gag about having him swing past the window. And he came back. There was another good thing. When he actually got through the window, she opened with the sonic screwdriver, and he was actually on the floor, and he saw the milk and the cookies.
Yeah.
He says, "Mom's been expecting you." And, he sort of said, he delivers a line which was along the lines of, "Did you say I was expected?"
Yes.
But he does it in this low Scottish tone, which to me made him sound a bit like Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, Mr. Bond, I've been expecting you, Mr. Bond. Everyone's been expecting Mr. Bond, but he's secret.
Yeah, that's really, I love that scene.
You watch it again, if you watch it again, and I only tend to watch these things once, which is why my memory is so rubbish when it comes to actually joining up all the callbacks in the episodes.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it was something that he's previously done. Perhaps Matt Smith did it in Angels in Manhattan, but he's caused all sorts of trouble with that.
It's interesting that you say that. I think we might have talked about this before, but I only watched the new Who ones once as well. I think we chatted about it, but maybe not on the podcast. And we're not alone in this, David, are we? I think we both know other people who only watch, and yet we've watched classic Who many, many times over and over again.
But certainly the ones from my childhood I've watched repeatedly.
Yes, yeah.
I think this watch it once is more of an adult behaviour.
Yes.
Certainly me, because I've only ever seen Enemy of the World and Web of Fear once.
Yes,
me because too. They've come to me in as an older person, and I felt that I've sort of done them. I really ought to watch them again, actually, because Enemy of the World was fantastic.
It was such a surprisingly good story, wasn't it?
Surprisingly good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I'm wandering off all of a sudden. But yes, I only watched them once, and I don't even have the benefit of a target book to recall them by.
No.
I've got them all on the discs. I buy the discs. I just don't open them.
Me too. You're exactly the same. I do exactly the same. The minute they come out, I go and get them, and they're on the shelf covered in dust, and I've got them. And
yeah,
I keep thinking, one day, you know, I'll watch that again. But it doesn't, I don't know why, I just reach down for the old ones if I want to watch a Doctor
Who. I've worked it out. I think in your heart of hearts, I look at all the stuff I've got stockpiled. I'm honest with myself and think, well, I haven't actually got enough life left to watch all of this. But if I want to watch it, I have it. It will involve taking it out the cellophane.
Yeah.
But I have it. I think my last interaction with Doctor Who Season 9 was dropping the Blu-ray on the floor. Oh. Still unopened.
Yeah. And
no, I'm terrible.
The day will come when you want to watch it and they'll be scratched and they won't be...
It'll be fine.
Yes, but it's an interesting behaviour. One for the psychologists listening, perhaps, and they can email in and...
But I'm only saying that I've seen the Christmas special this year one and a half times, because, as I say, there's no concentrating in this household when Doctor Who is on.
Well, as I said, you know, that's interesting. You watched it differently to me. It was... The only thing I did was I did watch it probably an hour or so later. Normally, the house is cleared. Everybody knows, Dad wants to watch Doctor Who, so they get... But this year, because we've had the arrival of a grandchild, we have to jump to her tune, I'm afraid, and to wait for So my nose was, I don't say my nose was put out, but you have to do these things and go with the baby.
Sacrifices have to be made.
It is a sacrifice, David. Of course, that happens.
That leads us nicely back into the story, actually. Grant was, of course, the nanny, the male nanny.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't that a decent coincidence that his childhood sweetheart, he should get a job raising her child, or at least looking after her child in those critical early formative years?
Yeah.
Sort of form of stalking, isn't it, if we're brutal?
do you know when... I was just about to say before that I actually really, really enjoyed this episode. It was more of a rom-com thing. But actually, you're pointing out the things that are turning it into a bit of a creepy thing, actually. We've got dangerous, sadistic traps set by the Doctor, stalking people who want to look after somebody else's baby,
I mean, I don't blame him. She was the character. In many ways, I wish that character had been the new companion. Yeah. I'm so rubbish, I can't even remember the name of the character, but I quickly looked it up.
Lucy Fletcher, is that the...
Fletcher, the journalist character, yes.
Oh, the journalist? No, she... Oh, what was her name?
Lucy Fletcher.
Oh, it is Lucy Fletcher.
Played
of course.
By an actress called Charity Wakefield.
Yeah. Which I, do you know, when I wrote the names down earlier, I actually
but she
got...
has, that's her maiden name, and she's actually Mrs. Lombard as well. She's got two identities, but her professional identity as the journalist is Lucy Fletcher. And, of course, you know, journalists have historically been good companions to the Doctor.
Of course.
I'm thinking, of course, of Sarah Jane.
Sarah Jane, of course.
The investigative reporter.
Yeah.
So I thought, wouldn't it be just brilliant if the Doctor could have travel with a journalist again? That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Apparently, I don't think it's to be, but I don't think we can rule out any of these characters returning.
No.
I don't think we can rule out Dr. Sim returning, because at the end of the episode, I don't want to hop straight to the end, but did you notice... Without the aid of any of those sinister surgeons, he managed to get his brain from Dr. Sim's body into the unit soldier's body, which is why the last shot of Dr. Sim, he had hollow eyeballs. It was really quite graphic, wasn't it?
It was really creepy, that one.
He didn't actually, unless the surgeons worked furiously once the soldiers arrived,
yeah,
to take him out and pop him in. He just seemed to sort of self-relocate.
I wonder.
So I think we'll be seeing him again anyway, but I don't know.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it. Of course,
they also, they also made a huge point of saying, of declaring, was it Brock, wasn't it?
Mr. Brock.
As the alien, and he said something about The Vengeance of Harmony Shoal, and the Doctor sort of wibbled his lip a bit and acted very, very frightened.
Yes.
But I've got a feeling that Harmony Shoal is coming back, simply because we know one of those aliens is still on Earth, large in New York, and in the guise of a UNIT operative.
It was quite interesting because I liked the fact that UNIT were going in to sort of mop up. And there was an American UNIT, of course, wasn't it? Which was
Well, they come out of the United Nations. And, of course, the United Nations is based in New York City, is it not?
Of course, yes, yes. I didn't think
so. I imagine, I know they were based in Geneva in the context of Doctor Who.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, I'd imagine that they would have an American wing.
Yeah.
Place for that to be based would be New York City.
Of course, it does make sense, doesn't it? What did you think of the scene setting in here? Because it wasn't actually filmed in New York, was it?
No, apparently it was filmed in Bulgaria.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think? I know, Bulgaria. How does that work?
Well, I assume that they're somewhere on a black back lot in a studio in Bulgaria. They have a set that doubles as New York City. Maybe they leave it there and attract...
Yeah.
The business of anyone needing the New York architecture, or maybe built it there from scratch.
Yeah. What did you think about
it? No, but I thought it was an amazing setting.
Yeah.
And it had me fooled totally.
Yeah.
That you know those external fire escapes are a very New York thing.
Yes.
And the other thing, which they didn't really go for in this, but the other very, very, very New York thing, apart from the high-rise, is the fact that everybody's air conditioning unit is on the outside of the tower block.
Oh.
They just sit there on ledges.
Do they really?
That would have been an extremely New York set dressing. Oh. I'm sure there was one in there if I have looked very closely for it.
That's
but,
interesting,
I thought that set was fantastic.
Oh. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was very, very good, and as it was filmed at night mostly as well, I thought it looked really nice actually, very nicely filmed. And I also loved the. It's quite interesting because we've got this fabulous title, "The Return of Dr. Mysterio."
Yes.
What I love, and I do really admire. You know, the way this is written, because, you know, the way he writes is so complex sometimes that it can be quite difficult to follow, but there's always real depth there. And what I've noticed in this, and you just pointed out another one to me, which I hadn't noticed, is he always has, you know, for example, we think it's going to be the return of Dr. Mysterio. We assume it's going to be... That's going to be the action hero, but it's of course it's not. It's the Doctor. We have the action hero who isn't really an action hero in the sense that he has these powers, but he doesn't have the sort of personality of one at all, does he?
No, he's in fact, they actually they make a verbal joke about it, don't they? Somebody calls him wet, and he says, "I prefer mild-mannered."
Yes.
So yes, there is something. I suppose Clark Kent was slightly wet, wasn't he, as well?
That's right.
I have to say, returning to the New York setting, I know it wasn't set in New York, but what I saw... It sort of transported me back to about 1978 when I saw the original Superman movie.
And it did exactly the same for me too, David.
Christopher Reeve. And even the flying effects were very, very similar.
They were. And it all seemed very purposefully done because you know when the ghost comes in through the glass, I'd read a few comments online saying... Oh, he looks a bit small. He doesn't look as in sort of intimidating and powerful as these action heroes. But of course, that's absolutely intentional because the point is that he isn't really this sort of big macho superhero, is he? You know?
No, he's become a hero through misadventure, hasn't he? Swallowed medicine.
Yes.
Which was actually very funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the idea that the doctor was waiting for it to pass through his intestine and basically pop it out the other end.
Yes, I like
and
that.
The doctor said, well, that's not going to be pleasant, presumably because he intends to retrieve the thing. But again, that seems rather sinister that he should wait for the child's bowel movement out on the ledge on the top of this tower block.
Yeah.
It was all very silly, but it was it was good silly. It wasn't silly.
Yes.
It was funny silly.
It was.
And you know, there was another bit in it which I actually adored, although I'm sure some it was too silly for some people's taste, and that's when Lucy Fletcher, the journalist, was interrogating Peter Capaldi. Because, again, she wasn't visually that intimidating.
No.
But she brought out Mr. Huffle.
I know.
Kept inflicting pain on Mr. Huffle. And because Mr. Huffle was in pain, the doctor started to talk.
Yeah.
And they play it with absolute truth, but it is very, very silly.
It is.
Very and yet silly, you brilliant. Feel that you've... I feel I want her to stop hurting Mr. Huffle.
Yeah.
And I think the doctor feels the same way.
It's very interesting, isn't it? It's like...
Screeches in pain.
Yeah, yeah. But, I thought it was silly. It suited the Christmas one. I don't think it would suit a standard episode.
No, but I think it was very amusing.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the other things to say about Doctor Who and the fact that we know it's in pretty good health at the moment is the fact that it's so popular.
Yeah.
It keeps getting a Christmas Day story.
Yeah.
And of course this year we haven't had anything in between.
No.
The last story we had was the previous Christmas special.
I know, a whole year ago.
A whole year without anything.
And it's been shocking. And we only had that class which I didn't watch it.
I'm afraid I didn't watch it. But
you're not alone.
I suppose
there.
It was Doctor Who light, wasn't it? In a way.
Oh, it was. I tried to. I know that it had terrible. I mean, it hasn't been on TV proper. It's on iPlayer only, I think.
It's on BBC Three, wasn't it?
Yes.
Which is online, and then it's on. It's either been released or will shortly be released as a Blu-ray.
Oh, right.
Pete Capaldi is actually in the first episode as the Doctor.
And that's why I was going to watch it, and I tried. You tried? I lasted 10 minutes, and I couldn't.
Oh, dear.
Oh, I couldn't bear it. I mean, I don't want, you know,
I'll make a pact with you then. I'll buy the DVD, but I won't open it.
Oh, I think that's actually a very sensible thing to do, David.
Or the Blu-ray, I should say. The Blu-ray,
I mean, you know, if you do get around to watch it, I'd be interested to know what you think. But I really couldn't get past it. I couldn't get 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I can't. But it's not meant for us, is it?
No, it's not. It's not.
You know,
and I was absolutely straining in this episode. Once I twigged that I hadn't actually seen an episode since, was it The Husband of River Song?
Yeah,
was
Husband
the previous
of River Song.
One?
Yeah.
Husband of River Song. Well, there were a lot of callbacks to that episode as well. 24 years, the night that lasted 24 years. Where's the Doctor been? He's obviously waited out. The Husbands of River Song, it was called, the internet tells me. Waited out the 24 years with her, and it was all sort of seemed to be frantically backfilling some story.
Yeah.
What were initially really, really, really good episodes, the Silence in the Library episodes, were New Who at its best.
Yes.
Really, they were fantastic episodes.
Yeah.
But we seem to have gone on this big arc trying to backfill everything to get Riversong to her death, and I was glad that we were pretty much released from all of those callbacks this year. There were a few nods to the previous show, but I, of course, haven't seen it since.
No.
And I couldn't remember it. But I do remember Matt Lucas being in it as Nardole, and I seem to remember he was a decapitated head the last time we saw him.
The Doctor put his head
somehow
back
the Doctor's
on.
Resurrected him and popped him back on a body.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. And he was Matt Lucas, who I think is a very fine actor, actually.
Yeah.
He was playing a similar character to Nardole in Tim Burton's original Alice in Wonderland
film.
Do you remember? He played Tweedledum and Tweedledee with the effect of with the help of some special effects. He played both twins.
Oh,
and that's the performance he's now giving in Doctor Who. And it was good in the context of the Christmas episode because it sort of added to the pantomime vibe, didn't it?
Yes, yes,
it did. And he was, I don't know, or perhaps I'm riffing here, but in many ways he was sort of, it was the wisdom of the fool, wasn't it? Because he said some quite telling things.
He did, yeah.
But from a fool's perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not pretending that this was Shakespeare at all. I'm not pretending that this was the Lear-fool relationship being played out for Christmas Day entertainment. But he got to do the speech at the end, which tied everything off, the summation of the previous episode, didn't he, when he spoke about all things coming to an end and her name was Riversong. He got to do all of that.
Yes, and that was it. He told the family as they left, wasn't it? You know, he was saying, I say the family, you know, the sort of the three people there, that, you know, about what's happened and so forth. Yeah, so I think he did have that bit of
He did bring thing. Something to the feast, I think.
Yes,
I did enjoy his performance.
Me too, I liked him. But again, I don't know, we've been told that he's going to return in the new
series. He is going to return because we saw him in the trailer.
Oh, did we?
He was in the trailer, so he's coming back. Right. Whether he's a regular, I'm assuming he's just part of the TARDIS crew now.
Gosh, yeah, I don't know how that's going to work, but
we shall see.
Yeah, we'll see.
I haven't got long to wait, maybe till April.
Yeah.
Then we'll find out how it's all going to come together.
I'm so looking forward to having it back.
It'll be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Do you, overall, with the story, we're used to the Christmas one now being a little bit fluffy and just maybe pantomimey. What did you think of the story overall, though?
No, there's about time we did speak about that. I did enjoy the story.
Yeah.
I think I've said to you privately before, perhaps not during the podcast, but privately, that my previous favourite Christmas special, although I did find the one with the wardrobe in quite moving at times, but my previous favourite was Voyager the Damned.
Yes.
Years ago now.
Yeah, a long time ago.
But did you notice there was the same cataclysmic thing going on there, where you had the Titanic sort of hurtling towards Earth, about to leave a very big bump, and you had same thing with the Harmony Shoal spaceship coming crashing out of the stratosphere and Grant the superhero managing to prevent it from, you know, it didn't just sweep away at the last second this time, it was actually physically stopped,
which was great,
didn't it?
It did, and that reminded me,
that resonated so much with my favorite special. I really liked
right. It reminded him, well, it actually, you know, you were saying you had that sort of, what I think of as the original Superman, you know, which is Christopher Reeve.
Yes, Christopher Reeve, yeah.
Yeah, in was it 78, you said? I remember
78, the first film was issued, yeah.
Well, I very much had that feel about it. It gave me that feeling at the end, you know, it's a bit silly, but it's great, you know.
It's silly, but, yeah, I mean, Superman the movie's even sillier than the Doctor Who Christmas special when you actually come to split it to pieces, but it was well-meaning nostalgic silliness.
Yes, yeah.
And we all love things to resonate with things that we like.
Absolutely, and I think David?
No, I was going to say there were lots of things resonated here. I mean, I do understand that the brain aliens have been out before, and they were out before in The Husbands of Riversong.
Yeah.
But I'd totally forgotten about them.
Yes.
What I said. But I was just going to say about the brain aliens. The brain, they made a big point of popping these brains in, but then they could unzip their heads and produce firearms.
Yeah.
So wherever the brain went, I don't know, maybe they could retract the brain down somewhere when they wanted to reach for a gun. It's very, very silly. I thought, why, you know, you've got pockets. Why keep it in your head?
It's not a quick
draw, is it? You've got
That really was silly, wasn't it?
It was so like the Slovene, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you remember these unzipped themselves and, yes. and you're in trouble and they squished out of those human, they were constricted in their human shells.
Yeah, that's right.
Really quite a nasty thing when you think about hollowing out a human being and jumping in the skin.
Yeah.
As much as jumping in the brain cavity
yeah.
or the bit, the skull, the cranium.
Absolutely. It could be a really sort of gruesome, nasty effect.
Well, it could have been gruesome if they'd have shown any of the actual surgery.
Oh,
I think it's been ghastly and utterly unsuitable for Christmas.
And that's the magic of Doctor Who, isn't it, at Christmas, you know, where
it can be scary and it can suggest.
Yeah.
But I think maybe it would lose something if it became a sort of borderline slasher movie. Perhaps it would lose something. I mean, don't know if I've said it to you before, but the film Jaws, when it's at its best, when you don't see the shark,
yes,
it's just down there and lurking,
yeah,
and it could come, but it doesn't.
No,
the minute the shark breaks the water, it loses everything.
Yeah.
So maybe keeping some of the gruesomeness hidden.
Yes,
perhaps that's probably best.
I think so. I mean, I'm a big fan of I love old horror films like Hammer Horror and the Amicus ones, and they are nowhere near as gruesome as these modern horror films. I find them repulsive.
No.
You know, I they don't scare me. They don't give me any sense of of fear, because I just look at them and see buckets of special effect blood being and CGI.
Right.
I don't like that. But the old ones, you know, where Dracula, you know, Christopher Lee's cloak comes up and covers the woman as her neck and breasts are exposed. I mean, that's great then. And cut, you know, it's like, I love all of that.
You don't have to see everything to sell the fact that something reasonably unpleasant is happening. You don't have to see it.
No.
You can imply it, and I think luckily they do imply it a lot without actually doing it. There was another good gag in this one as well, and that's the Doctor caused a distraction. Do you remember how he did it? He flooded the downstairs with Pokemon.
Oh.
That was children. So they were obviously all off playing Pokemon Go.
Was that in the Japanese one?
Easy. No, this was in the Christmas special.
They
said, how did we get here so easily? He said, I flooded the downstairs with Pokemon.
I met within the Japanese office.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, of course, they were in Japan, weren't they?
It's one
for the children, a reference that somebody of my age simply doesn't understand.
Yeah, well,
hunting, weren't they?
Yeah, well, in the summer holidays, I was walking my dog on the beach, and there were all these children with phones and iPads in front of them walking around the beach, and I thought, are they doing a school project or something? But when I asked my son, he told me that that's what they're hunting
Pokemon.
That's it.
I was glad that they put in a reference that I understood to be amusing, but I didn't have any personal experience of that or doing that activity. But if it gets young people out and about, then it can only be for the best, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. As long as they take note of where they're walking as well, just in case, you know, don't want to hear. But no, it's...
There was something else I particularly liked in the episode as well, actually.
Yeah.
And that's the fact the whole thing was framed as a comic book adventure.
Yeah.
And there was one scene when you had the ghost and you had the journalist and you had the doctor, and then it split. You sort of had a triptych thing going on where they put a white divider and divided the screen into three, and they showed the phone call, and then they moved up one of those dividing lines and showed the baby as well.
Yes.
And it was like a comic.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, really good.
Yeah, I like that too. I thought that was great.
That,
yeah.
Curtis Allen, the idea that the doctor just doesn't get it. He thinks he's hit upon something when he realizes that Clark Kent and Superman are the same. And he does that fairly early on. And you think, well, how does Lucy, how does she not know that Grant is the ghost?
Yes.
It's that Lewis Lane blindness.
And that's what I was saying earlier about the quality of the writing, David, which I really like, because we're always wrong-footed, but we always end up sort of seeing it from that point of view. Like you said, that it's the mirroring, really, isn't it? It's the mirroring. Mm. When you said to me that, of course, she has another identity. Lucy Fletcher is also Mrs. Lombard, isn't it?
Lombard, yes.
And when you said, you know, the doctor can't see it, but of course, then we have it mirrored in the fact that Mrs. Lombard can't see it either, you know.
She can't see it, no.
Yeah.
She can't see it because she is, in the context of this story, Lewis Lane, who is referenced, and Spider-Man was referenced as well, and Superman.
Yeah.
And the doctor scribbled a pair of glasses onto a picture of Clark Kent and said, look, they are the same.
That was,
That was a major discovery, and that was the childish innocence of the doctor.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that Peter Capaldi is an older person makes it funnier.
Yeah, it was.
Matt Smith used to do it.
Yeah.
And there was a scene when they were on the roof and he has to climb some stairs.
Yeah.
I think I've said this to you before, but he just imitates the movements of John Pertwee so much with his physicality.
Oh.
You know, I think I've said it in the context of him running.
Yeah.
And I just saw John Pertwee coming out onto that. That ledge. And of course, the Pertwee doctor is my doctor. He's the one who was on the throne when I was first watched.
Yeah.
And so he is, you know, anything that can connect me with memories of that is very, very, very welcome.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And he does encapsulate all that. I love that. Yeah, he makes these little references. He's thrown back. What I love, you know, with Capaldi's doctor is he's aware very much of the whole range of the audience. I know you said that you know, there's a lot more for adults as well now. I think, but I love the way he puts these little references to the history of Doctor Who. You know, he did it right from the moment he was announced, where he put his fingers on his lapels like William Hartnell did.
Ah, right, yeah.
When he did that. And I know that William Hartnell is his favourite doctor, he said in an interview
before. Really?
Yeah, he said that he watched William Hartnell and he said he absolutely loved him. He said he thought he was fabulous. Now, I didn't realise that. And he actually met... I think he was at the filming of the, what was the one Mark Gatiss, An Adventure in Space and Time, or Time and
Yes.
And he met Heather Hartnell, I believe. I think, no, it wouldn't have been Heather Hartnell.
It wouldn't have been Heather Hartnell.
It was the granddaughter, Jessica Carney. Yes, yeah, you're right, Jessica. And she had brought in for them on the set the actual ring, which was the actual ring, yeah, which we see
her grandfather,
her grandfather's, yeah, which is, we see in The Power of the Daleks, of course, don't we, on the
right,
on
doesn't fit anymore,
yeah. And it was only a week or so later, he said, that he found out that he was going to be the next doctor, and he so wished that he'd asked, could he please borrow the ring, because he would have worn it for the regeneration story.
Well, I mean, the other big resonance between Capaldi and William Hartnell, of course, is they were both the same age when they were cast.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Because, of course, William Hartnell's doctor can be extremely childlike.
Yeah, yeah.
He suits him and petulant and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But then he can be extremely authoritarian as well.
Yes, yes.
And he can. I mean, he's less of a superhero character than a modern doctor, obviously, but he can deliver the authority lines as well as the regressive childish behaviours.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm trying to say, but there are moments where he had that little chuckle he used to do to himself when he was finding something incredibly funny.
Yes.
And it wasn't cruel, it was just knowing. It was really good. Again, you see, I've probably said it before, but I dislike it when people badmouth William Hartnell's performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Because actually it was really, really nuanced.
Yes.
He was doing his very best against a back-breaking schedule with no retakes.
Oh, can you imagine?
And failing health.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was Pat Troughton, who was a much younger man, wasn't he, and much fitter, you know, who said, this is killing me. This is you can't do this.
Right.
And it was, I believe it was, who was the incoming producer after... it was Barry Letts, wasn't it?
Barry
Letts who
it's
came
Derek Sherwin.
Yes, who came up with saying we've got to reduce the number of episodes and change the way we record them because it's too punishing, you know. If you're doing play school for 50 weeks a year, that's not an issue. People can come in and, you know, or Blue Peter, isn't it? But not a programme like Doctor Who, which is...
You've got one central character... carrying the whole narrative, particularly at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
One character that around whom the whole thing revolves.
Yeah, no, I don't like it. And I always, I sort of always love the way that Peter Purvis always stands by William Hartnell, and I listened to an interview recently where he said he has got some bad things about him. He could be racist, perhaps, as many people were in the day. He could be, he doesn't detract, but he says regarding his acting ability and what he is, he says he was, you know, absolutely fab and doing what he was meant to be doing, that it was all acting. And regarding, yes, he made a few mistakes, you know, as these days we have such slick TV, it's all stop, cut, slip that out, redo the line, and, so they didn't have any of that then, did they, you know?
No, none of it.
No, and I think I can only admire him, you know, especially, you know, what he had to do day in, day out. It was incredible. It's... But sorry, we've gone off there.
Because I raised the first Doctor there, the context of the Christmas special. The first Christmas special was the episode. Was it the Feast of Stephen?
Yes.
And that was very much the exception, wasn't it? Because you didn't get an episode every year in those days on Christmas Day. Now we're lucky we do.
Oh, we're so spoiled. It's just been... I mean, is this the 11th or 12th or...?
Become part of the fabric of Christmas Doctor Who now.
Yeah, they can't get rid of it now. It's got to stay as part of it.
It stays.
Yeah.
Do you think I hope so? And I'll tell you who else I hope stays, and that's Peter Capaldi.
Yes.
We know Stephen Moffat's leaving. I really would like to see Peter Capaldi working under a different executive producer.
Yes, me too.
Different material.
Me too.
Because I think he is the show's biggest asset by a mile.
He's fabulous.
If he's had enough, or he's finding it too draining, or somebody's offered him a big movie, I can understand why he might want to move on.
Yeah.
But I personally hope that the show... We know the show's got a 10th series because we've seen a trailer for it.
Yes, yeah.
Probably we'll talk about. But the other thing is, I hope that we're pretty sure we've got a season 11 coming, and I would love to see Peter Capaldi still at the helm there as the incoming executive producer to resist the temptation to cast his own man.
Yes.
Because there's so much more an actor of Peter Capaldi's experience and stature can bring to it.
Yeah.
That I would very much like to see him stay.
Yes, me too. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I just really want to see him under Chris Chibnall and see what this different dynamic brings to it. I'm just going to say, so overall, I'm going to rate this a 7 out of 10. I really enjoyed it.
I'm going to give it 8.5.
Oh, wow. Wow,
I wouldn't. Yes, because as I say, I enjoyed it nearly as much as I enjoyed Voyager the Damned. There was much of merit in it.
Yeah.
There was a bit of silliness in it, but it was good-natured, positive silliness rather than a big convoluted plot that needed huge engagement in order to try to understand. So I'm giving it a massive 8.5.
Wow, that's very
I will be buying it on the Blu-ray, but I probably won't open it.
Yeah. This is going to become a catchphrase for you now, I think, Dave. It's going to be great. We're going to...
I might drop it on the floor and leave my interaction with it to that. Yeah.
Well, that's a fabulous way. And I'll just say, just had a quick check on the Doctor Who news site, and the, it was watched, the overnight figures for it were 5.68, or call it 5.7 million, which was only just behind Strictly Come Dancing and The Great British Bake Off. Yeah, well, I think Strictly had 7.2 and The Great British Bake Off had 6.3. It's done pretty well, I'd have thought.
It has done very well, because people watch television differently now.
Yeah. I mean, you said yourself in your household, it was on, but it wasn't...
We had it on, but we weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
At least most of us weren't.
Yeah. could we, we always run to about an hour in the park, and we've got a few minutes left. Could we... I'd be really interested to hear what you think of that trailer that we were treated to at the end. So what do you think, David?
Well, the only person I recognised in the trailer, you got a cutaway shot of David Suchet. And I thought, oh, that's an interesting piece of casting. Right. I wonder what he's going to be.
Yes.
David Suchet was, he was in, he obviously has very strong... Well, he's an actor of great experience and standing, but to get names of that quality in the show can only do it good. But I think the thing you're trying to get me to commit on is the first appearance. Is it Bill?
Bill, isn't it? Yes.
Bill? Interesting. We've got my concern is if Matt Lucas stays on, we're going to have two companions in constant need of teaching, in constant need of being edified by the Doctor. He'll become the teacher again, because they're pretty much duplicated effort there. Yeah. But I'm not put off by it. I think we must see where the show goes next year.
Yeah.
I know she was serving chips in the university canteen, wasn't she? In the trailer, so she's got some skills.
Yeah, she's got some skills, and this takes me back to something you mentioned earlier, which was regarding Bill. She reminded me. You said about we Peter Capaldi sort of owning the show and being the show, and that's who we looked to. When Russell T Davies brought it back, we were very much seeing it from Rose's point of view.
We were seeing it through her family.
We were. And I had the feeling from this trailer, we had a bit of we had a bit of dialogue from her, and it seemed like we were seeing it from her point of view too.
Ah, you think we've come full circle and we're going back to Series 1's construction.
That's the impression I had. Did you pick up on that, or was it something
I can't claim to have picked up on it, but I do understand fully what you're saying, and I can see why you're saying it.
Right.
And that might make a nice change from these huge story arcs that really could be resolved a lot quicker than they are.
Yeah.
It could be a very positive thing.
Yes, yeah.
Full of hope. They've had a long time to write and plan and record this series, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, they have, haven't they?
They've had longer than usual, we must travel forward with great hope and think that we're going to get something quite fantastic next year.
I hope so.
8.5 for Return of Dr. Mysterio from me, and it was a 7.
A 7 from me. Not that...
I think we've made clear that we're looking forward to Season 10.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking forward to Season 10, and this is going to be... And I hope, perhaps we'll be able to review them as well when the episodes come out.
You never know.
Yeah? But do you want to, just to round up, do you want to let our listeners know the two targets that we are doing next?
Yes, the targets we're doing next, except one of them isn't. The genuine target we're doing next is going to be the Doctor Who and the Day of the Daleks, which is by Terence Dix and read by Richard Franklin.
Yeah.
And then, and this is like going down the Target gym because it's 10 discs long, we've got Doctor Who, The Pirate Planet.
Oh,
I think the author's name? Is it James Goss?
James Goss. Or...
From a story by Douglas Adams?
Yeah, from a story by Douglas Adams, yeah. This is a really exciting
and
one.
It's read by our favourite reader, who is John Coleshaw.
Oh, this is... I just know... When you see all those names amalgamated together in one production, it just sends a shiver down my spine. I'm so looking forward to this one. It's going to be great, but we mustn't prejudge it. Maybe it's not going to be. You'll have to listen to find out, won't you? Are we going to be doing it? Well, thank you so much, David, for taking part today. And I'm going to wish everybody, well, this is going to go out tonight. We've recorded this on, I don't know what day it is, David.
27th of December.
27th of December, and it's going to just be put straight out tonight. And so I'll wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I don't know if you want to give
absolutely. I wish everybody a not only a belated Merry Christmas, but a fantastic 2017 as well.
Oh, that's great. And I hope everybody achieves the things they want to in the year. I know you, David, are well on the way practicing to achieve.
Oh, yes, yes. But you mustn't get me started on it, Greg. Otherwise, we'll be here for ages.
We'll
hold that one over, then we'll unleash that one on another podcast, I think.
No problem at all. That's fabulous. So thanks, David, so much for joining us today. Really enjoyed it. And take care to everyone. And please download the next one. As you said, Day of the Daleks. Please tweet us at Doctor Who on Target. That's DR Who on Target. Or email us at DoctorWhoOnTarget@gmail.com. That's the end of this episode, and I would like to thank BBC Audio and Penguin Random House for kindly supplying us with preview copies, and to Smerin's Antisocial Club for the use of their version of the Doctor Who theme tune. The biggest thank you goes to you, our listeners.